Let's see what happened over the last day or two. Democrats took control in Connecticut and New York. President Trump fired Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He fought with the media. Well, that happens about every other day nowadays. And politics continues to rule the conversation. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. As you know, the big race in Connecticut was the one for governor. Democrat Ned Lamont is the governor-elect. But, and you may have missed this, the Hartford Courant did not endorse the Democrat or the Republican candidate, but the editorial board at the Courant endorsed Oz Griebel. Mr. Griebel led a spirited campaign, which in the end was unsuccessful. Still, many voters that I spoke with said they supported him, but when it came time to make a choice, they were afraid of not having their vote count. Oz Griebel is here now, and we're going to have a long conversation today about how to fix Connecticut, politics, unaffiliated, and a whole bunch of other topics. We ask you to join the conversation. Give us a call. We have a toll-free number. A lot of people don't know this number, and they get confused, but it starts with an 833. It's 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5837. You can email us at TFS@WSHU.org or tweet us at FullStoryWSHU. Oz, thank you for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ron.
I have to read part of the Hartford Courant's endorsement. It says, neither the Republicans nor the Democrats came up with candidates with the tools necessary to lead the legislature out of its paralysis, bring state employee unions to the table, responsibly foster the business climate, or chart a clear path for long-term growth. In a state where unaffiliateds outnumber Republicans and Democrats, it's time for an independent governor. It's time to break the cycle that leads to the same place year after year and try a different approach to running the state. And that's why the Courant endorses Mr. Griebel. Does that make you feel good, or is it bittersweet now?
Oh, no. It makes me feel good. What's troubling is I didn't deliver on the goods, Ron. I mean, that endorsement was wonderful. We picked up a number. Monty Frank, my running mate, and I picked up a number of others. We had tremendous people working for us, a great deal of wonderful volunteers who did all kinds of things during the entire year plus. And I'm just personally disappointed in my performance that I wasn't able to convince voters that the wasted vote and spoiler fallacies were just that, fallacy. So it's not bittersweet. It's just I'm just very disappointed that I wasn't able to carry the day with an endorsement like that, with a running mate like Monty Frank, and with the team that we had.
But do you think it was your how did you say it? Your performance, or
what I wasn't able to do, Ron, is rebut this issue of if I vote for Griebel Frank. I'm de facto electing Stefanowski, sort of the horrific Chris Murphy tweet in the last day or so. Or if I vote for Griebel Frank, I'm electing Lamont. I must have gotten emails. I didn't count them specifically, but I'm willing to bet a fair amount of money that for every email I got that were it's a wasted vote for Stefanowski, I got at least one for it's a wasted vote for Lamont. And not being able to demonstrate, which is where I thought we were headed, and that I thought that endorsement really gave us the kind of acceleration in that last week that was going to be critical, it didn't work. I mean, we just didn't get too many people still felt that if they voted for us, it was going to be like they bet too many people went in and voted defensively. Too many people went in and voted for the lesser of two evils. And I think it's very unfortunate. I said this, we put out a press release. I'd been sending out e-blasts to our teams and whatnot to say, look, that I said that if the political gremlins stole this election from Monty and me and resulted in Stefanowski's election, Connecticut wasn't going to fall into the ocean on the 7th. Donald Trump wasn't going to move here on Wednesday. And similarly, if the gremlins stole it for Lamont, the Connecticut still wasn't going to fall into the ocean on Wednesday, and the unions weren't going to have any more control on Wednesday than they did on Tuesday. So the idea, we put forward what I referred to as an aspirational plan. We put forward specifics on this. It's very frustrating when I really do think the media let both candidates get away with intellectual murder by not having to push on any of their issues. It's frustrating, but look, at the end of the day, the voters spoke. It's our job now to do everything we can to, as collectively, not just Monty and me and our team, but everybody, to do everything we can to see that Lamont is successful and that we make material progress in these next 4 years in employment growth and addressing these very serious fiscal challenges we face.
Did it matter to you that Ned Lamont was the victor?
It didn't matter to me at all. Look, the only reason I went into this to win. So everything short of winning didn't make any difference to me.
What did you hear from the voters when you were out there? What was their number one topic?
Well, the reason that I threw my hat in the ring to begin with as an independent is all the things that I've been hearing for particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, that the lack of employment growth, no net job growth in 30 years, more taxes and fees at ever higher rates, continued underinvestment in transportation and education, failure to support agencies that take care of the most vulnerable in our society. That depending on where you were and who specifically you might be talking to, but that's a big umbrella I just described. But everything was under that umbrella. Yeah, you would get issues, questions around certainly the opioid crisis is a major issue. The criminal justice reform. We had one of the questions at the last debate on assisted suicide. I mean, but the core of this is the frustration that people feel about the lack of employment growth, and you know, Stefanowski's one note campaign about I'm going to cut taxes. Which to me is one of the big fallacies of all time, and I think many people saw through that, and that's why I think people were concerned about the wasted vote fallacy. But what angers people are always going to be angry about taxes. The old adage about don't tax you, don't tax me, tax the person behind the tree. None of us want to pay taxes. We all get that. But what really angers people, and all the years I've been here, particularly in the last decade, people are angered about how the money is spent. If people were confident prior to this lockbox amendment that was passed on Tuesday, that those gasoline taxes that we pay were going into the special transportation fund and not being rated, if people felt like the money that they get charged on their electric bill were going into the green bank and not being rated, if people felt like the taxes they were paying were strengthening our education system, I don't think you'd get anywhere near the frustration and the lack of confidence. And what I've always said, the crisis and the reason – one of the major reasons we ran is the crisis in confidence that has permeated so much of Connecticut in the last decade, crisis in confidence in the residents, crisis in confidence in the employers, that we collectively have the political will to do what's needed to structure Connecticut for the 21st century on a financial basis. That's what I think. That's a long-winded answer, and you're going to get slightly different emphasis on by whoever you ask, but that's the essence of why we ran, and that's the essence of what we heard throughout the campaign.
Oz Griebel is with us today on The Full Story. Please join the conversation. Call us toll-free, 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5837. Email us. Drop us an email, tfs@wshu.org, or tweet at @FullStoryWSHU. How did we get in this mess? This is nothing new. This has been going on for decades.
We've always said no net job growth for 30 years is just that. And you can argue to some degree that the income tax got us down this road. But the thing I'll say about the personal income tax, it's the workhorse tax of the state. People argue, well, Washington doesn't have it or Texas doesn't have it. You can't look at Connecticut that is so small with virtually no undeveloped land left in it. People who live in the state do not want an aircraft assembly plant here. We've got Sikorsky, and we've got the research out at Pratt, but another one I think would have a tremendous. So the idea that you're going to take and bring a major employer here requiring significant acres of land, whatnot, even in our cities, which are kind of strapped just in terms of their developable land, the idea that you're going to get more commercial activity in here just on the basis of that kind of growth. This is an entrepreneurial state, startups matter, and the like. So the idea that the personal income tax is at the root of our problems, I categorically reject. At the time the income tax went in, we had the highest sales tax in the country at the time. All taxes you can argue are regressive, but the personal income tax to me is the least regressive of all taxes. It's based on your income, not based on the fact that everybody's got to pay the same sales tax rate. Can we get rates down? Absolutely. Should we get rid of the estate tax? Absolutely, because it just sends the wrong signal to this. But we're in this mess. The point the point at which the proverbial tipping point, if you will, where I think the crisis in confidence occurred, did not occur in the 90s right after the adoption of the income tax. It occurred in the 99 to 2001 period, where we ran surpluses to the tune of about $5.5 billion over three fiscal years. And when the amendment to authorize and support the personal income tax went into place, language said that that surpluses could only be used for three things: servicing existing debt, funding the state employee pension fund, and funding the rainy day fund. Those were the three things, unless the governor with 60% of the legislature declared a quote emergency close quote, which is what we did in that period. So of that $5.5 billion ballpark, only about $1.5 billion went into one of those three categories. By declaring the emergency, they were able to sweep the balance of that
the
money
rest of
into,
it.
Into the operating budget. And I think, yeah, it's an inside baseball thing,
right.
But people who pay attention to this, that's what caused my attention. You may recall that then-Governor Rowland sent $50 rebate checks twice,
yes,
back to voters. I sent my checks back to him with a note saying this is not what the surpluses were
you
used for.
You sent it back?
Yeah, I sent them both back. And no matter, I always said John Rowland was one of these people that anybody who ever met him, he was one of the great guys of all time. You know, put the serious criminal commissions he had, but. He would always, every time I would see him after that, he would always say, oh, there's Oz Griebel, the man who doesn't need $50. But the point is that that's not what the money was there for. And I think when you start going down that path and you use gasoline tax for that, that's where people lose their confidence.
You're listening to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. When we come back after our break, we're going to talk more about how to fix Connecticut's economy. And joining us will be a UConn professor, Oz Griebel, with us in the studio. Stay with us.